Every week on the Moth Podcast, you'll hear true stories that will intrigue you, inspire you, and make you laugh.
He said, is there anything in your diet that might be spiking your blood sugar? I said, sometimes I eat pizza until I'm unconscious. He said, I think that might be it.
For real stories live on stage from comedians, astronauts, accountants, farmers, and people just like you, follow and listen to The Moth wherever you get your podcasts.
I thought, if just for a second, as we're getting close to WrestleMania, and I'm going to be traveling. We didn't even think about this. I'm going to Naples, Florida, with the kids for a week next week. After I'm finishing out this week, all of next week, and then I'm off for spring break with the kids. I'm going to go down to Naples, Florida, and we're traveling the day of the of WrestleMania, the Saturday. Because I'm going to stop by South Carolina, see my uncle. I like to drive. I know people think I'm crazy. It's only a week. I'm not even going to Disney, and yet I'm driving down to Florida again. I know I'm stupid. I'm crazy. But I actually like to drive. I know it seems, for someone who drives in 3 hours a night, I'm in the car almost as long as I'm on the air, to add a 25-hour drive. But we stop in South Carolina. I see my uncle. Looking forward to it. We're going to be driving on Saturday during WrestleMania. But I would, the promo, this Cena Cody Rhodes thing is getting fun, because the promo that they put forth on Monday Night Raw, I thought up until the moment that Cody did his finisher on Cena in the middle of the ring, up until that moment, because I hated that, and then Cena acted like he was knocked out unconscious, it was a bit much. But prior to that, I thought they had a really good promo. I think it's a fun ride to WrestleMania, and me and the kids are into it.
Are we up to 3 days on WrestleMania now?
No, just two.
It's still a two-day event?
Still just the two. Yep, that's all. It's okay. Too much for you?
Yes.
Oh, come on. You gotta get into it.
I grew out of WrestleMania.
Yes, I mean, so did I. And then
I don't
my
understand
kids brought
that
me back
so many,
in.
There's too many grown men on this station that love fake wrestling.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, listen, it's not fake. It's scripted, okay? It's a television show. And it's excellent. I think it is a good time for it. I lost it too. I was into it as a young kid. I was a Hulkamaniac with the rest of everyone else who was born in the early 80s. And then I lost it for a while then, and then got back into it like 11th and 12th grade with DX and, the Attitude Era with The Rock, DX, Stone Cold Steve Austin. I got back into it. And then I lost it for, 15 years or whatever, up until we were sitting around one Sunday in February. Early February, I guess, or one Saturday in early February, late January, and it was like too cold to go out. What are we going to do with the boys? I'm like, oh, today's the Royal Rumble. Maybe we'll put on the Royal Rumble and see if they like it. And that decision, that quick turn to my wife where I said, we could try the Royal Rumble and see if they like it, has changed my life in so many ways that, now I'm literally talking about John Cena on the show. It's nonstop. Everything we look for, getting stuff for the Easter baskets now. We're looking at wrestling stuff, and it's just all wrestling. He's big into baseball too. We got our own little fantasy baseball team. I come home in the morning and we watch the MLB app has the recap of every game. It's like 45 minutes. As soon as I walk in, he's got the remote ready. He's already up at 6:30, sitting on the couch, ready to start all the highlights from the baseball games. So they're really starting to get into it.
So you, but you have kids though that like.
I do
it.
Have kids.
So
yes.
That and so that. Well, yes, you have kids that like WWE. So
correct.
At least that makes sense.
That's how I got back into it. But
Lou
I would tell.
Yeah, doesn't have kids.
No, he does not.
Loves wrestling.
Yes, he.
What
does
he do when he goes home?
I don't know.
What is it? Do him and his wife hang out?
I've worked very closely with Tom for years, and I've known him fairly well. That's always been a question of mine. I don't know. I don't want to talk about his personal life, but every trip he makes is without her. He talks about it like she's she's wealthy. The family comes from wealth. They argue about the same petty things that most couples argue about. But it's like everything is like, I'm going to South Carolina. I'm going to Carolina with the guys. I'm going to the Borgata with the guys. I'm doing this. I watch pro wrestling. During the time period I worked with him, This Is Us was big. I'm like, do you watch This Is Us? No, I don't watch that. Do you watch any of these shows? No, I don't watch. I'm like, well, what do you and your wife do? She's watching wrestling with you and watching Mets and Knicks and yelling about dudes and dogs. Doesn't she like things that you participate in? Like, I never get any of that from him.
He can't wait to get on the air and complain about her rearranging his underwear drawer. Yeah,
that was, I heard that. I happen to have heard that. That's the, he was mad that his wife folds his underwear? That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Out of all the things you're going to get mad about, you're going to get mad about your wife folding your drawers.
It was bizarre. He was like, listen, I do my own laundry. It's great. And, you know, the other day she did it for me. Wonderful. Thank you so much, honey. You're a wonderful wife. She did my laundry. But she folded my underwear. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? She did your laundry. You're mad that she folded your underwear?
Because now she's setting the precedent that he has to fold his underwear.
Is that was his point? That now it's like she's saying subconsciously, like, when we do laundry, honey, we fold our underwear. Like that. Oh, my God. And let me just say this. Like, my wife does, I'll do my own laundry. My wife does pretty much all the laundry in the house for me and two boys. She's the best. That's the one thing. Like, I try and clean up and vacuum and do things like that. Laundry is almost exclusively her. I feel bad about it sometimes because, honestly, most men I talk to, even my my good friends who are married and everything, almost all of them exclusively do their own laundry. I'm like the one guy who's like, yeah, no, my wife does all the laundry. And so I feel bad about that, but I try and do other things. Like, I do clean the house, and I cook for the kids a lot, and I do all of that. But when it comes to laundry, I don't fold. So, like, the idea that my wife folds my underwear is common practice.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's one thing I've learned. 6:30 to 7 p.m. is a trip into a dark mind.
Yeah. That could be true. That could be true. And right now, he's very focused on Big Brother, Little Brother. That's kind of where he is right now. He's very focused on his Knicks. And he will lead you. Don't worry, Met fans. As bad as it's been, right, if you lose tomorrow and Clay Holmes gets lit up and you've lost the first two series of the year, don't worry about it. Tommy will lead you. Let's go to Nikki the Kid in Rockville Center. What's up, Nikki?
Nikki. And Manny will try to come and take the crown and be like King because he's cool and funny, but there's only one Mac Money. What's going on,
that's
my
up,
man?
What's going on?
I have not talked to you. The Rockville Santa. What was it? What was it? Winchester? What was the place?
Church Hills.
Church Hills,
yes. Yes, yes. And I haven't spoken to you in a while. I remember speaking to you a lot, Nick. I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I know. And now you big time.
Yeah, we used to talk on Saturday nights. That's right. It's been a while.
Yeah, no, man. Come on. I never stopped listening. You only got better.
Thank you.
You only got better, you know. Heartbreaking on the Val Kilmer thing.
Yeah.
You know, as they're doing Heat 2, you know, they were trying to figure out how they were going to work him into it. Supposedly Ashton Butler is supposed to play his part, you know, in a prequel sequel of Heat that they're working on right now. And then the other guy, what's his name, with the Adam Driver, whatever, he's got role.
You know. I read that, yeah. No, it is sad. And Val Kilmer, Val Kilmer was early on a comedian. A lot of those movies early on were like spoof comedies. And then I thought The Doors kind of changed it for him. And then it was Heat. I thought Val Kilmer was really good.
He was like the original Ryan Reynolds to me, you know?
A little bit, yeah. His career kind of reminded me of like Tom Hanks a little bit, where Tom Hanks was doing obviously TV and Bosom Buddies, and then was doing movies like Bachelor Party and The Burbs and Money Pit. Like, Tom Hanks was a comedian, and then he did Philadelphia, won the Oscar, and then it was like, oh my God, it's one of the great actors of our generation. Like,
it blew up. That's
And Val obviously never reached the heights of Tom Hanks necessarily, but I do think, and I was just reading the story about him. At the time, they said at the time, so I'm assuming it's changed since, but when he was he was the youngest actor ever accepted into Juilliard's School of Acting.
Really?
So, yeah, he was the youngest. I'm sure they said in the article at the time, so I'm sure it's changed and there's been younger students since, but when he got into Juilliard, he was the youngest in history to ever get in.
Well, they got great stuff, Mac Money. They got, because he documented supposedly like every movie he ever worked on.
Yeah.
So
he was big with the
camera. Right?
He
got footage of every backstage, you know, like what Heath Ledger kind of did.
Yep.
But with every flick he did, he's got video of, you know, him psyching himself up for a role, whatever the case may be. And, you know, and I'll sit with you on that Tombstone White Earth thing. I don't care how not money-making wider boy.
Yeah.
I don't care. It wasn't a blockbuster. It's still the most realistic to the T.
Totally agree. You know. Val Kilmer was brilliant as Doc Holliday, but for my money, Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner is a far better Wyatt Earp OK Corral story. It's a much better film than
to the T. It's like court testimony. Like the movie came out before the official book that was like the comprehensive history of it by Jeff Quinn. But when you read it, you're like, oh my god, this was like right what the movie was like.
Yeah,
to the T. And I saw. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Perfectly. Yeah, I had to ask you this. It's kind of like going back to the day, but I remember, long story short, Carton, Evan, you guys were going at it. By the way, you and Louie were awesome on that show.
Well, thank you.
They got into like your high school sports career.
Yes.
Like, you're nothing, Mac, but you like were like all... Like not to get into an Al Bundy four touchdowns single game, but you were like all state on like football and baseball, right?
No, and thank you for the call, Nikki, and it's good to hear your voice again. No, I wasn't all state. I was an all county football player, and I was a 4-year starter at for baseball. Actually, that's not true. I was a starter in 9th grade. Then I had an issue with the coach in 10th grade. And then ended up not playing most of the year in 10th grade. But I was starting varsity in 9th grade for baseball. I was an all-county football player and captain of the basketball team. But my highlights, football was the one I got the most prestige for. But, yeah, I mean, when I talk, people don't understand. People think I'm having fun with it. Yes, I was Cary High School 2001 Athlete of the Year. It's fun when I say that. I'm not trying to really say that I was some kind of an amazing athlete. I played at Cary High School. I don't think a scout. I never talked to a scout. No one ever came to see me play. Like I was an all-county football player. I played in the Senior Bowl at Hofstra on Thanksgiving Day 2000. I was captain of the baseball team. I was captain of the basketball team. I played a lot of sports. I was pretty good at all of them, and I was a very good football player. I was very good at putting people on their ass. As an offensive and defensive lineman, I was good at putting people on their ass. That's what I specialized in. I'm not that tall. I'm thick. I was low to the gravity, and I would get underneath people and put them on the ground. But I joke about being like, if you hear me talk about it, I talk about the $600 I got in textbook money. Like I was given a scholarship of $600. It came with the Athlete of the Year Award. $600 for textbooks. So that's when I get dismissed around here. I know I'm heavy, and I know every time they put a video, they couldn't zoom any freaking closer. They're trying to see what I had for lunch every time they put a video out about me. But when I get dismissed for all these athletic things, like, oh, we'll have a basketball team while McMonagle can't play, or, oh, we'll do this. I don't know who could play, and nobody thinks of me. I'm just telling you, I need to chisel some things off, but the athlete is still here. I was a solid high school athlete. I wasn't getting recruited to go to Ohio State or anything, but I was a solid high school athlete. And I have fun with it, most of it. Oh, whenever I bring it up, it's usually sarcastic. Some people get at me, they think I'm trying to be vain or something. It's all in fun. I'm messing around. I did it with Craig and Evan because they were challenging me, and so I brought it up. And I usually bring it up as a sarcastic type of thing. You know, that cliched fat guy doing sports radio who can't get past his high school success. Like, you know, that's the role I'll play every once in a while. And Eddie plays the role of Gotcha. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, buddy. What's happening,
what's
man?
What's going on? How are you?
First of all, let's get on the Florida thing. I heard on Moose's show they were talking about how you do that drive.
Yes.
I did that drive three times this year.
Three times this year alone?
Well, including last year, yeah.
Okay, so
you drive right through it or you stop?
The first two times I did it, I drove straight through. And last year, my uncle has recently retired to South Carolina, so now we have like a kind of destination to stop at and say hello. So
yeah, that's what we're looking for.
Last year and now this year, when I do it this year, I will stop in South Carolina. But the first 2 years, yes, I did it straight through.
Yeah, I don't like it. It says starting out like 17 hours and 45 minutes, and all of a sudden it becomes 20, and then it becomes 21, and then it becomes 22.
Well, this year, I mean, I'm doing... It took me about 20 hours to get to Orlando from where I live, both years. That's kind of where it was. We'd stop for breakfast. We'd stop, you know, for a quick lunch, nothing. We'd stop at a restaurant for breakfast, then we'd probably just get something quick for lunch or dinner, and it usually took about 20 to 21 hours to get there. Now, this time, I'm going further south and west to Naples, so it's even a further drive. So I'll be stopping at South Carolina. I think it's right down the middle. I think it's like 10 and 10. So we'll see.
Right. Yeah. It takes a day to recover from it, though.
Oh, no doubt about it. It takes, plus, with the, it's like, at least I'm not doing Disney. I'm actually going to be able to relax. We're just going to relax, go to the beach, do some things, just to get out, you know, see my uncle, do something, take the kids. Because we had... you know, vacation over February. They have winter recess as well. And just a week with them in the house all day, I just can't do it. And I know the weather's going to be nicer and there'll be other things to do and it'll probably be easier than February was, but still, we just decided after that week, like, we're doing something when they're off next week.
Right. Now, we're talking about this all-county high school, you're always saying that, which is fine, but do you ever throw out what the records were for those 4 years? Were you guys playoff teams? Were you county champions? What were you?
I was not a four-year starter as a football player. I was as a baseball player, and I got to tell you, I don't even remember the records. We didn't make the playoffs. As a football player, I started 11th and 12th grade. I started as I was one of three starters on the team as a junior. And my junior year, we went 5-3. And my senior year, I think we went 5-3 as well. Missed the playoffs both years.
Got it. All right, now let's get on this baseball thing. You know, first of all, you know, I'm not a big baseball guy. I used to play a lot in the heyday and watched it up until the 80s. But what is the difference? The manipulation, first of all, the manipulation of the bat. How come they don't measure the velocity of the swing? Because that's what's really happening.
They do.
Getting around on the swing a lot quicker with the meat of the bat towards the middle a little bit more.
That's a fair point.
But here's the question. What's the difference? They're customizing the bat, right, to the player now.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference when a pitcher scuffs the ball or puts a little grease on it or puts a little pine tar on it and he's customizing the ball to him? What are they going to do next?
Well, that's not...
Put weights in the ball that customize to the pitcher that the ball drops at a certain...
No.
What are we playing? Parlor games here?
No, why is that a parlor game? Everyone, like other sports...
Because if you change the bat, you can change the ball. If you can customize the bat, then why can't the pitcher customize the ball?
Because it's not exactly the same thing, customizing the bat and the ball. Because it's just not the ball is the ball. Bat is used by an individual. The ball is played by everybody. The bat is used just by that one person. And we've had an established set of rules where the bats can change. Bats can be a certain weight for a player. A bat could be a certain... Like, if they just had a custom bat where it has to be 32 inches long and 32 ounces heavy, and that's a baseball bat, and now all of a sudden they've changed those rules, that's fine. The baseballs are made by Major League Baseball, and the bats have certain things that they have to abide by, but you can have a bat custom to you. That's not new. That's what it's always been. You've always allowed to have a heavier bat, a lighter bat, a different bat, change the knob, change the handle. Like, that's been allowed throughout the history of baseball. Change the wood. It's not a uniform bat. It's a uniform baseball. Now, they do allow some level of stickiness. Even now today, when you get tested for the sticky stuff, like, they allow a certain level of sunblock and sweat or whatever. There's a level of sticky that you are allowed to use. You can't go overboard. And you can't use any foreign substance that they don't approve of. I'm still waiting, and I thought they would for sure. I'm still waiting for, like, the universal MLB sticky stuff that is allowed on the mound, on the rosin bag, or whatever, that you can go to that they are saying is a fair level of sticky. But they haven't gotten there yet, but there is some level of stuff like that. But again, it's about improving, and we all understand that it's about improving offense. The pitching got too good. The breaking balls were too good. There was too many strikeouts. Nobody wants strikeouts. It's a business and an entertainment business at that. And strikeouts aren't entertaining for the most part. They want to see the ball put in play. So no one's going to cry foul as much with a bat as opposed to a baseball that's being, you know, manipulated by sticky stuff and striking everybody out and putting up these crazy, you know, spin rate numbers. But they actually, you're not wrong that they do measure bat speed. Like they do, I listened to a podcast from The Athletic called Rates and Barrels, and they go into a lot of this stuff, and they do measure bat speed. Like Giancarlo Stanton has the highest bat speed in all of Major League Baseball. He swings the bat harder than anybody else. Now, maybe there is something to seeing if the bat speed picks up with these torpedo bats. I don't know. I don't think so. And I think people are like, when you look at the bat, do you think it looks that dramatically different? Some people say yes. I don't. I don't think it looks dramatically different. It's a little thinner at the end of the bat. Like, it's not like the barrel doubles in size or anything. They're not swinging a sledgehammer. It's still the same thing with, like, the barrel slightly lower towards the label. I really don't think it's that big of a deal. And as the Yankees proved last night, they were gifted two runs on a ground ball to first base. They scored two runs last night. Or three runs, because they hit three solo home runs. That's it. It's not like they're, you know, when they face good pitching, they're not going to hit 15 home runs. I think it's blown way, way, way out of proportion. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. We'll get into some other things. We'll still take your baseball calls. I want to get into the Knicks and OG Anunoby and how he has emerged offensively with Jalen Brunson going down. Obviously, more from that Knick game and getting ready for the postseason, and hopefully their captain will return soon.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories, the unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
105-91, and obviously a couple different storylines in this game, but ultimately, I think we're starting to at least see or hope of what we were looking for when Brunson went down. And a lot of us, myself included, thought, you know, where they are, I think they're at 99% now to be the three seed, and most likely a matchup with the Milwaukee Bucks coming in the first round, a Milwaukee Buck team that, you know, has no Dame Lillard. You know, you feel pretty confident that they'll be able to get through. It's what's after that, right? And maybe this is all for naught anyway, no matter what happens, because are they in the class of Cleveland or Boston? We don't know. But when he goes down, there was actually, in my mind, the idea of the positive feelings of this team having to become stronger in different areas of the ball of the team without Brunson, that if they could do that, if they could find that, and then Brunson comes back and is healthy enough, maybe they could be a team with more options. Maybe they could be a team with a deeper bench after having needing it for a month and a half. And Tibbs having no choice but to be deeper into the roster. And we've seen that a little bit, right? I mean, at times, you know, Shamet scores 20 points in this game. A Chua one for 11, but not a great game for Precious. But like, we've seen the bench, you know, Kolick go a little bit deeper. And obviously what we've seen, the, you know, Josh Hart and the triple doubles, Mitch Robinson back, he gets a double-double in this game with 14 rebounds and 14 points. And he's kind of, you know, filling for Cat with the knee last night. We're starting to see him kind of get his feet underneath him and help the team defensively. But what I was hoping for was an offensive explosion from Mikal Bridges. I was looking for Mikal Bridges to step up, find his game, find his shot, you know, find his confidence, find his physical play, get to the basket more, get to the foul line more, you know, become that secondary scoring option to Cat without Brunson. And what we're finding is OG Anunoby has stepped up and taken over that role. OG, who started out the year looking like an all-star caliber player, who eventually slowed down. And I don't know if it was the amount of games he played early on, the amount of minutes, obviously, which will always be a question with this team and this coach. But early on, it felt like, wow, what a great start for OG. He was finding a shot. He was actually creating his own shot a little bit. He was getting to the rim. He was leading the NBA in dunks for a while at the beginning part of the year. And it was really working out for him. And then it looked like whether he was tired because of injuries over the last couple of years, he hadn't played that many games in a row to go 30 straight games. Was something over the last couple of years he hadn't done, and he looked tired, and then obviously he had the injury, and maybe it took a little bit of time coming back. But what we're seeing now on a nightly basis, I mean, again, in this game, you know, OG Anunoby scores 27 points. You know, 2 for 9 from 3, 5 of 9 from the floor, gets, 2 of 9 from 3, 7 of 16 from the floor. He takes 13 foul shots in the game. He's getting to the foul line. He's getting to the basket. He's creating his own shots. And right now, the offense kind of runs, especially with no Karl Anthony Towns, runs through OG Anunoby. And if he could be the defensive player, like if this team can actually be what it's supposed to be. Now, Bridges isn't fighting through screens. He's not been the defensive player. But, I mean, you got two perimeter defenders in OG and Mikal Bridges that should be far better than they've been in giving up open looks and open threes and allowing particularly the pick and roll game and the screen game of the Boston Celtics to just absolutely kill them. Like, they should be better at that. Now they've gotten a little bit, obviously, more of the rim protection with Mitchell Robinson coming back from injury. And they've kind of established themselves where they know that they can find a basket. They can do things without without their star in Brunson, where when Brunson comes back, and he's probably going to be limited with the ankle, that this team can run the second unit better than it's been able to run the second unit, and that you can find scoring from different places besides Karl Anthony Towns and Brunson, because they've been forced to do it. That's the hope, right? That's what we were looking for when Brunson went down, that, hey, we know the way they've played right now, they're not good enough to beat Boston, they're not good enough to beat Cleveland, they're not good enough to beat OKC, right? Those are the three teams where they were getting absolutely killed by. But, you know, the game's over within 3 minutes left in the second quarter. Like, it was just, there was no match. There wasn't a game. And so we were hoping that the benefit of this injury is that they could find different ways to become a better team, have Brunson come back, play a couple of games, get ready for the postseason, and be better off for it. And I don't know if that's actually going to happen. I don't know if we've seen enough to make me feel like, yes, we've established that. The bench is deeper now. Mitchell Robinson is back and the defense is better. OG Anunoby is playing like he did at the beginning of the year as a legitimate looking like all-star caliber player. Bridges has been, you know, better. He's had his moments. Obviously, the Portland game, you know, that mid-range, especially from the corner, has been money for him. So he's found some shots that he's been almost automatic with, but the three-pointers still aren't what you'd expect him to be. His shot still looks like it has a bit of a hitch to it, and he hasn't been the offensive player nor the defensive player you had hoped. And I didn't see that growth from him I was looking for, but OG has stepped up and become that guy. So the question is, as it will be, you know, now, and it sucks that it's, it has a negative connotation, because the idea that the Knicks are guaranteed 3C and all that matters is whether or not they're good enough to beat the Celtics is a position that I wasn't sure we were ever going to get back to. But, like, that's where we are, where it's a given. Like, even, you know, a lousy 76ers team, you know, a lousy Portland team, you know, they step on the floor. They don't have to have Karl Anthony Towns. They don't have to have Brunson, they don't have to have their, you know, best games. Like, they're going to find a way to win because they're the Knicks and they've had a winning culture and they do just enough and Josh Hart does just enough and they'll get enough rebounds and they'll hit enough threes and they'll play, you know, intense enough to get through these games and they're going to be a winning team and they're going to be a top 4 or 3 seed in the NBA Eastern Conference looking, you know, going forward as they're just beginning this journey with this core group that's going to be here for a while. And that's the owner's words. I wouldn't expect massive changes. I really wouldn't, no matter how this thing shakes out. So, I mean, you're looking at a core group that's moving forward with this team for the next handful of years, and it's going to be, we're going to go into the season expecting a 3-4 seed at the worst, and the question will be, are they good enough to beat the upper echelon teams in the Eastern Conference and in the NBA? And right now, the answer still feels like no, but we've got to get Brunson back. And they've got to establish who they are. And it's going to be tough with only a handful of games left, whether there's 7 games now left in the NBA season. And I think they were pointing to, what were the games I heard?
Well, I was just going to ask you, Chris, assuming Kat is back tonight.
Yes.
Against the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah.
How much does this game matter to you tonight? If they get their ass spanked again,
yeah,
is it just another indication that they have no chance of competing with Boston in the second round? Who they're probably
that's probably going to be their opponent. Yeah,
I know Brunson's out, but
that's the thing. Yeah,
and if the Knicks go down to the wire with Cleveland tonight, does that change anything? Because they've gotten blown out.
No.
In every game against them in Boston and OKC.
I know. It's funny because it's an easy. My answer is very Nick leaning favoritism. Like, because my answer is probably going to be, I don't know if the blowout on a back to back going into Cleveland, if Karl Anthony Towns plays without Brunson, if they get blown out, do I put more stock into it? Do I view it as even further? I don't know. I don't know if it changes how I feel necessarily, but if they go to the wire or if they manage to win the game, I'll probably fool myself into thinking it matters. So it's an easy cop-out answer where I'm playing the Knicks, you know, if they lose, they win. If they win, they win. But I would say no. Do you think a blowout, you think going into Cleveland on a back-to-back and a blowout's going to change your mind? I heard you talking about that. You don't think with Keith that you don't think they have much of a chance against Boston anyway. So, like, if they get blown out by Cleveland, does it further make you feel that way, or is it just what you expected? And I'll ask you the question, because if they win the game, or they really do fight, and OG scores 33, and Mikal Bridges scores 28, and Karl Anthony Towns is a force, and Josh Hart has a triple double, and they find a way to, you know, lose on a last-second shot or somehow beat Cleveland in Cleveland, I would tell you it would make me feel a little bit better. But I don't know if a blowout would make me feel any worse, because I feel like they're in that position now, and without Brunson, I can't gauge it.
I agree. Yeah. I agree totally. Back-to-back, no Brunson still.
Yeah.
I'm assuming Cat will play. If he doesn't, then I'd be happy if they kept it within 15, if I could just watch the fourth quarter.
Right.
I want to see next Tuesday, last meeting against the Celtics at the Garden. I hope Boston plays all their guys. I hope that they're not like totally locked into the two with nothing to play for at that point. And I want to see how the Knicks do against the Celtics. Yeah. Punch them in the mouth and let them know, as Zoo would say, that we here.
We here.
And we're ready for... Yeah. Well, that's assuming they get past Detroit or Milwaukee, wherever they have to play in the first round.
Right.
I would relish a first round matchup. 3-6, Knicks and the Bucks, and no Dame Lillard. That Bucks team is soft as pudding. They will fold.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great matchup for the Knicks. I totally agree with you. Without Dame, I agree. He's kind of, as much as, you know, Giannis is Giannis, the competitive nature of Dame, and I think they probably would fold.
And we get to play against Choke Rivers, who will probably say I didn't get enough credit for winning two games for the Knicks winning six.
I haven't talked much about that. That could be one of the odder comments I've ever heard a coach say. Like, I get it. I'm defending Boone all show here. But, like, the idea, like, I don't get credit enough for the we probably didn't deserve to even win those three games. Like, that is just unbelievable. What an unbelievably soft comment. You have been known to be a choker and lose all these game sevens, and you're like, but nobody credits me for the three wins. That is something else. I've never heard that before. But now, Ian Begley saying they're targeting either Saturday or Sunday for the return of Jalen Brunson. That I'd be surprised if it's in Atlanta. I would think Sunday.
Second half of a back-to-back again.
Yeah.
He's either playing one or the other. He ain't playing both.
Totally agree. And I think they'd rather have him at home against Phoenix. So I'm looking at Sunday against Phoenix. And that gives him, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games to kind of, you know, find himself and get back into rhythm and test that ankle and see if he can trust it for the playoffs. But, I guess we'll see how Boston treats that Tuesday. But that's probably for me, again, having Monday off, at home the whole time, Sunday against Phoenix at home, off day Monday, and then Tuesday against Boston. I would look at that Boston game with Jalen Brunson as more of a test run than I will Wednesday against Cleveland, or tonight against Cleveland.
You know what I'm hoping for, sadly?
What's that?
As somebody that I think the Knicks still have zero prayer to beat the Celtics in a best-of-seven series, I'm praying for Cleveland to collapse. Boston's 4 games back of the Cavs for the 1 seed.
Yeah.
Boston catches them, and then the Knicks, if they make it to the second round, would most likely play the Cavs instead of the Celtics, and then I can dream about getting to the conference finals.
Correct.
And the Knicks play the... If they somehow win this game tonight against Cleveland, They play them again, the penultimate game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I would love for their lead over Boston to shrink to one or two games.
And that game means something.
And that game means something for the Knicks, mm-hmm. and they could potentially help Boston catapult over Cleveland for the one seed.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you just painted the, without question, like if you look, and because of the schedule, if they have Cleveland twice here, including the Friday, the second to last game of the year. If they beat Cleveland tonight and then beat them on Friday, and that sets up the playoff matchup, and Cleveland, after this incredible start to their year, has been wire to wire the one seed in the East, somehow blows it. The Knicks deal them two of the more devastating losses down the stretch, help the Celtics overtake them, and sets up Knicks-Cavs. That is the dream. With the idea of how they've played them in the playoffs, with the idea of now, you know, the comments of how soft they are and how out-physical they were against the Knicks and how out-tough they were against the Knicks. And now the Knicks cost you the one seed down the stretch, and now you've got to face them in a playoff series. That is the dream. You're 100%. That sets up for as best a possible route for the Knicks to get past the two seed and into the Eastern, the two second round and into the Eastern Conference Finals as possible. That would be ideal. So, I mean, that starts tonight. Now, you know what? You've given me a dream. We could dream for a victory tonight, setting up for a big game Friday, depending on how Boston wants to handle it. That's part of it. But if there's an opportunity on that Friday night to knock Cleveland out of the one seed and set up a... Because I agree with you. I'd much rather play Cleveland. I don't trust them. I know they're a solid team, and I'm not telling you the Knicks will win or that they'll be favored or that I would expect them to win. But I think they'd have a hell of a lot better chance than they would against Boston.
We saw the Knicks rock the baby with the Cavs 2 years ago in the first round. And Garland's been a ton better. Mitchell's been better. They got Kenny Atkinson now versus J.B. Bickerstaff.
Right.
I would still confidently say the Knicks can and would win that series.
Would. Wow. Would. He's going with the would, folks. I don't. Would is a bit strong for me, but I do think it's a better opportunity than it is against the Celtics. And the added pressure of how they've played previously and the idea that the Knicks were the team at the end of the year to clip them and send them to the two seed, it'd be a discussion, but let's get Brunson back first.
Well, that's the thing, though, because last year the Knicks lost, you know, the war of attrition to the Pacers.
Correct.
Brunson being hurt right before the playoffs, again, he could get hurt again. OG could get hurt again, but if the Knicks were healthy last year, who knows what that conference final, if they beat the Pacers, who knows what that conference finals would have looked like against Boston.
Right.
And if they're healthy this year and they don't have to play Boston until the conference finals,
yeah,
I can dream.
I still
think they have zero prayer of beating them if that's the second round matchup, but we need the Cavs.
If they're tough enough to get through Cleveland, then you at least give them a puncher's chance against Boston. I agree. But I do think that's an interesting, and plus, too, with Brunson, right? The benefit of Brunson missing all this time is that even with the injury, if that ankle's good, he's on fresher legs, right? He didn't have, the way he carried the team last year, like, if he gets into the playoffs and is healthy, OG has had a stint on the injury list, so on the, you know, with time off, so maybe his legs, and clearly the way he's playing right now, indicates that he's feeling good and healthy and spry, because for a while he looked a step slow, and that has not been the case over the last 2 weeks or so. So, I mean, if you get a healthy Brunson on fresh legs with a healthy ankle, you get a surging OG, you get a now fully recovered, rust knocked off Mitch Robinson to go along with Karl-Anthony Towns' offensive ability. And if everybody's healthy and you could actually get Mikal Bridges to, you know, find his three-point shot, I mean, you'll see. There's always a puncher's chance. I hate the idea of there's just no chance, there's no chance. But there's no point in getting into that game until we see Brunson back. And I would think that Ian Begley was talking about Saturday or Sunday. I would expect Sunday live at Madison Square Garden against the Phoenix Suns to be the return for Jalen Brunson. He'll have a 5 or 6 game run. And hopefully he can be sure that he's healthy heading into the postseason. They can take care of who they take care of in the first round, setting it up for a big, pivotal second round and see if they can get out of it, most likely against Boston, possibly against Cleveland. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Omar in Brooklyn. What's up, Omar?
How are you? Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, here comes the upbeat, Omar, about the New York Knicks. You know what? Tom Thibodeau, even... he didn't want to do it. You guys can see it. The fans can see it. You guys have a bench. My son today, came to me and he said, Baba, you were right about Semit and right. Even Green said it in the broadcast. The defensive guy, at one time they were playing Semit. They were playing right. They were playing Mitchell Robinson, Ananobi, and Bridges. He said, this is a great defensive team on the right now. They are playing five men.
Yeah,
they were five good, great, very good defensive players. So Shamit, because he's good on ball and plus on the screens, he's so good. Dwayne Wright, it's so good defensively.
Yeah,
my man. I just hope when everybody's healthy and somebody has an off night, he can bring those players to play that game. That's my hope. And I know he's seen it now. How good is Wright as a defensive player? He's a defender.
As a defensive player, yes.
And what about Shamit has a quick release?
Yeah.
People say we don't have a bench. If you don't give them minutes, they don't get into the rhythm, and they cannot shoot consistently. Now they're getting the minutes. They are getting consistent, and now they can shoot. They have players. Same thing with Achiuwa. He has not gotten minutes, and he's very upset. The way they did it off-season, Achiuwa is a totally different player than last year. He was hungry last year. He wanted to be here. But when Mitch Robinson came back during this, you can see it in his play. He's not happy while he's playing. Because he's not getting the minutes.
Well, you know what?
Achiuwa is not the same player anymore.
You can blame the coach for that. I can also blame Achiuwa. You know what? Play the game. You get paid money to play the game. I'm sorry you're not getting the minutes you're not getting.
I agree. Both ways. It goes both ways. You have to be professionally. Look at Chambers. He was not getting minutes. Wright was not getting minutes. No. When they got the minutes, they start performing.
Wright's a decent defensive player, but he's not. You know he's not going to play in the playoffs.
I have one thing for you.
Okay, good. One thing.
One thing is, there is an upset beaming. I totally agree with I forgot that he said that there is a chance that Boston can still be one seed.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a brave prediction to do.
Okay.
Here it is. If the Knicks are the third seed and the Boston are the second seed, are the seventh seed, will lose that series to Chicago in seven games. Chicago has all the weapons that Boston Celtics doesn't need. They have three defenders, Kobe White on-ball defenders. They have a center that came up from Centennial that can isolate Porzingis because he cannot post up. There are players, and Chicago is playing at a level that after the trade, it has... They have exceeded every expectation. I'm watching Chicago Bulls. I hate Chicago Bulls, but I'm telling you, they are legitimately playing tough. They are the talk of the town. I want the series. 4-5, Melee, Detroit Pistons against Indiana Pacers. Now, the Indiana Pacers coach is Rick Carlisle again. How about this? Remember 2003 Melee? That's the series I want. I want third against sixth, Milwaukee Bucks against New York Knicks. I want Boston, Chicago, and I want Cleveland, Atlanta, all four seed into the top. And I have 100% agree with the guy that said if Knicks played Cleveland, I'll take Knicks over Cleveland. I have my reservation about Boston, but no. Cleveland, I'll take anytime, anyway, if we are healthy, we'll beat Cleveland.
All right, Omar, I got it.
I love how I'm a guy. If I haven't talked to Omar 50 times.
I know. Well, he's not, you know, when you're the host, that's one thing. When you're the guy on the other side of the glass, he doesn't recognize you. That's all. But yeah, no. He was saying, I missed him for a second. He's saying Boston would lose to Chicago.
Omar needs to put the crack pipe down.
I don't think Chicago, who's 34-42 right now. I know maybe you know they've played better a little bit here, but I mean, I'm not so concerned. If I'm Boston, I'm not worried about who I'm playing in the 2-7 matchup. I'm just not. 888-808-1019. Quick break. Mick Monagle here with you. We'll say good morning on the other side, and we got you for one more hour. So we've opened it up to the Knicks. Maybe we'll get into a little bit of football as well, as the New York Giants and Brian Daboll are not going to Colorado Pro Day. They are not going to see Shedeur Sanders or Hunter. What does it mean? What can we glean from it? Probably not much, and we should stop trying.
Are you looking for a podcast about pro football that doesn't put you to sleep with an avalanche of analytics or insult your fandom with brainless hot takes? Well, hi. I'm Dan Hanses.
And I'm Mark Sessler.
Oh, hi, Mark. And we're the hosts of Heed the Call, the NFL podcast you've been waiting your whole life for.
Heed the Call covers every game, every storyline, everything that matters, and we do it all with a touch of mirth.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast wherever you get your podcasts.